So what do you think of this Turkish language thing I cut in where the audio was really fucked up?
Is that what language it is?
I think, yeah.
Turkish?
It's from the Turkish Evil Spider-Man movie. A blatant, like, rip-off of the Spider-Man franchise. They didn't bother to get any copyright for. It's Turkey, you know, they set their own copyright laws. Turkey must make the worst movies in the world.
Can't say I've ever watched one.
Oh, well, check it out on YouTube. Turkish Evil Spider-Man.
Well, we were just watching a few clips earlier, and we were seeing how bad, like, some of the cheesy, some of the movies and stuff are that are available. And I got watching this today. And
ours.
Our movie today.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we're not that bad. We're okay. I mean, if we had a little bit of money for budget, you know, we might actually probably do pretty decent. I have to admit, the cameras was fun to work with. Not only that, it was awesome, man. But here you go back into the Turkish language again.
Yeah, well, we had real audio problem with the season 3, episode 51, LE420, Are You Ready? That episode had the snowball connected to the computer, but had the wrong setting chosen, I guess, in my broadcast program, and it was using the microphone from the laptop, we think. I ran the audio through Audacity and did a leveler across the whole thing, and took about 2 hours to convert and export.
It's kind of neat how you have the subtitles and stuff. I mean, actually,
yeah.
I'll be honest, when you first started doing films, I your style is much different than I do. You have no flash for an intro, for an opening scene. You just have just this title screen, usually like a dull brown. And everything's all centered off to the wrong side. Like it's like written in, you know. But I got used to that, I guess. I mean, it's definitely of your own style.
The way that I put text on the screen also conveys information. At the simplest level, it's on the right side because the character on the right is speaking. You know? Just because the bag itself is a recurring character in our series. And the audio is pretty funny. It's a screeching noise in Turkish. It made it look like Shelley was screaming to be there in the ship with us.
Well, I do like how we would go back and forth between cameras, and even the set change too. That was pretty good.
Yeah, in essence, we saved the camera by being able to switch the set out, the panel out, rather than trying to set up for a third camera. We just could cut away to the desktop or to previously edited footage, like the launch of the rocket, or when Z was marching and drilling around the yard. And it bugged you that I left it on so long, didn't it?
No, it bugged me because it's sideways.
Well, yeah, I couldn't figure out how to turn it in the moment. That was the first time when we went live with this footage that Z had shot of him marching with the helmet under his arm. That was the first time I had seen the video. And I had no clue how to use the program to rotate it. So it went out live sideways. And then I made fun of Z in a merciless fashion, I think.
Well, you like doing that anyway.
Yeah, well, it wasn't that bad. I was just... I kept complimenting him on his marching.
On my cut of jib.
Cut of his jib.
So when it comes to this show, we were discussing just about half an hour ago before we started this podcast
adult podcast using adult language in adult situations. Sorry to interrupt. Zorn and Bingo Rage Show, ZZORHN.ca. and Bingo Rage. BINGORAGE.
The other rage.
Yeah. One more space there.
Oh.
It was almost perfect.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You should have put that pause at the end a little longer.
You get just that dramatic pause.
Between the E and the other rage. Yeah.
Getting back to what I was saying, you've got the show itself where it's ended with Neela swapping the buttons.
Yeah, yeah, and I thought that was a really cool innovation you threw in there at the last minute. When had that occurred to you?
At the time, you looked at me. You said, "Kick Neela and go do something on screen," and I kind of went, "Okay." And so the entire thing was not only ad libbed, but I looked over at the two buttons, and my brain just went, "Hey, what happened if we swap them?" Oh, I want to see those two buttons. Let's get those two buttons and let's swap them.
I forget who I read once, and they said that the best way to do fiction is to create someone that people love and then put them in peril immediately and do the worst fucking things you can think of to them. And I loved that when he did that. And I was thinking to myself, well, how can we fix this? Or what can we do with that? And where does it go? And I thought it'd be really funny if we put somebody in charge of it, and they could go the whole show hitting like the wrong button, like the blow up button,
right,
instead of the save the engine button.
Right. How would you go the whole show having hit the wrong button?
Well, you said he switched the wires, right?
Right.
Yeah. So we said, hey, you got to hit this button to keep the engine from blowing up once an hour.
Don't hit the other one, I know, but once you hit it, it would destroy the ship.
No, you hit the wrong button,
yeah,
the destroy the ship button, and it would reset the engine. Like it was supposed to. But if he had done things correctly.
Oh, so they're fucking up the whole
show. They're fucking up the whole show, but it's what saves the crew.
Oh. And then you could have, of course,
the night come along.
Our short little bad guy in there, and he's like, what the fuck? How come it's not blowing up yet?
Yeah, exactly. Neela's gonna come. But you're gonna come up to the person who's sitting there, bored out of their skull, pushing the wrong button. And you'd be, what the fuck? And then you check the wiring, and then ta-da. But then you know somebody sabotaged it. And you don't know Neela's on the ship. Right now, I'm the only person who's seen Neela.
No, Neela's like the pokeroo. I never get to see him. Right.
So, yeah. That
pokeroo from the polka dot door. Oops, I just went and showed my age, didn't I?
So, yeah, I thought that was a good way to use that.
But usually our shows are a bit about content. And in this case, I think we've delivered any of our content itself. I like doing those kind of shows where we don't actually, we do the entire show in character.
Yeah.
Now, you were saying you'd like to get back to one of our regular shows where we try to be not only, entertaining, but also comical as well. But you like to have the aspect of educating people in our shows. I know you, and I think that's how we originally started our podcast.
I'm beginning to see, I think, that your idea of having more of a scripted a show, I think, is probably the way to go. Because we can do the same thing. If we do follow this format structure, where we kind of come in character, as Zorn and Bingo Ridge. We do our intros, any news we have off the top, but we go right into character and right into the skit, basically, which is the whole show.
You just gave me an idea. We have what available to us, three cameras now at this time? You could probably work
three cameras that can work, right?
We should have one piece of canvas that is exclusive for the Zorn and Bingo Raid show that we set up all the time, where we do our introductions, where we can do our stuff. And then we can pan to our other two cameras as well. What you do is you'd have the laptop set up with the Zorn and Bingo Ridge show logo behind you, mm-hmm. And along with an ideal set type of thing. and then have the other two sets being able to be adapted according to the needs of the show.
Did you like that Zarn and Bingeridge test screen we used to have? It's a small canvas, but I mean the picture is just a face with like a test pattern thing.
Yeah, actually, I think that was my idea. I said I wanted one of the test pattern. I was actually, and when I seen it, I didn't like it. Now I do like it. A lot of your paintings are that way. You know, it's kind of like mold; it grows on you. But the I had asked for like a TV. The old, you know, like the
yeah, bars. Yeah, I understand what you mean. Like the bars.
Stand by or something like that.
We can do that. In fact, yeah, that's not a problem with my broadcast software, but not a big deal. But something to think about. Maybe I can add more scenes to it.
Well, can you green sheet?
That's the thing. If we can get a real green screen, then we can.
Don't get ahead of the story. Could we actually do that where we have it so that we've got just a green screen behind your laptop, say? And
yes.
Just and be able to use whatever you wanted in its own way. And then, because I still like the idea of a painted backdrop. It gives a theatrical touch to
We can drop anything behind us if we have...
Well, that would be the point. That would be the technical fun. That'd be the fun camera that you can, you know, if you wanted to have us under the water, that would have been cool to have for that one, the oceans segment. Remember when we did a talk, when we talked about the oceans? Hmm. That would have been really interesting because you could have always had us underwater with fish swimming by and shit. Yeah. You know.
But, you know, that gets to be kind of distracting too. You just have it as a gimmick, you know, a bit set aside or something.
Or have us sitting on a boat. And actually, there you go. You could have some scantily clad women, you know, like walking to and hither and serving drinks and stuff like that and spanking each other's bums and stuff. I mean, that, of course, that's distracting too, wouldn't it?
Classy as well.
Oh, yes. I'm all about class. That's right. Bring on the bikini clad beer wenches, I say.
About the cut, what did you think of the edit?
The edit was good. I liked how you threw in a bunch of pictures in some spots, you know, showing the development of our props.
The studio work.
Studio work that it actually takes to do this kind of a show. Once again, we are on a $0 budget. If you're hearing this, and not so much as that your heart goes, oh my God, these poor guys, but just kind of goes, hey, you know, I wouldn't mind advertising with these guys, or even, you know, just throw us a donation. Certainly would go a long way.
Yeah, if you're a real patron of the arts, Miss Luntra, it's available shipped for $21,000 in North America. Well worth it, I tell you.
Miss Luntra, which one's that?
That's the one with the large paper mache face in the middle and the antler.
Oh, right.
It's a mixed media piece. Quite a cool painting with a three-dimensional aspect to it.
One thing I'd like to make sure that we've got hammered down, I think the concept of doing live shows is entertaining, but at this point in time in our development of the Zorn and Bingeridge show, I think we'd be better further ahead to just doing canned shows.
I think it's important to do it live.
It's hard to find an internet.
It's I know.
Now don't forget though, we could throw one out live at Ben. From Ben's place.
We need a better
from the grind up in Fort Francis.
We need a more dependable internet connection than Wi-Fi.
And he did mention that he wanted to do a closing show for your artwork.
Yeah,
Eric has a bunch of pieces
from the grind
right
up in Fort Francis, Ontario.
On display, if you wanted to go check them out. Probably by the time you hear this podcast, though, they might not be there.
I gotta talk to Ben about that.
Hopefully, they're sold. Unless we can get a good internet connection, I'd like to see canned versions of it, because trying to put out a...
Well, like I said, I argue for live shows for a couple reasons. A, because you have to be brave to do it. B, It's like theater, you know, you just go and do it.
I understand that, but I'm saying if your technology is causing you concern where it's distracting you from being able to do your job, where we're forgetting to hit record or we're forgetting to do sound, audio levels, and, you know, all these different things.
I've been on a steep learning curve, but I think I got it all figured
out. No, you're doing well. I think you do very well. But like I say, I mean, you're doing a hard job of running all the software, trying to go live, and allowing
us to change cameras really improved my ability to attend to the laptop, to switch scenes, to get the multiple camera thing happening. This worked with me being on the,
like, how it works.
In the cockpit.
But I'm just, like I said, and that's the last time I'll say it, is that there's a lot of times that we've gone late or whatever else simply because you're still
trying to get things mostly done. Mostly it's because doing too much at the last minute.
Well, yes. So
and what really went, I think, well this time around is that we got things hammered out far ahead of time, except for the audio.
So what would you like to see happen? Any not show per show, like personal shows per se, but where would you like to see this go? Like, what are we doing here? And I mean, this is just
getting attention, being creative, fucking making some damn money eventually, get paid for what we do.
Is there any sort of grants for video art?
For video art,
the Ontario Arts
Council? Sure. Yes, I'm sure there is.
We should look at that and perhaps maybe try to see if we can sink that into a little bit of like a new computer and some real cameras and, you know, like really, really some infrastructure for the facility itself.
Well, when you get your grant and your personal money of it, you can do what you want with that. I think most of the Ontario Arts Council grants are structured so that you can't budget for those kind of capital outlays. You can rent things.
I see.
But you know, you pay yourself, and then with that money, you pay your bills and you purchase new supplies.
Oh, I understand. Well, we'll definitely have to check into that as well.
Yes, I agree.
I think that, our show is self-funded, and both of us are on very limited budgets. It's not a hobby. You're right. It's not. When it started, it was something to do. It was.
Well,
but it's developed into something. It's morphed. It's become something so much more. I'm not saying that we're viral or anything, but I mean that everybody starts somewhere, and I would like to see us eventually go somewhere with this. Yeah, not so much as even the Zorna Bingo Ridge show, but I mean it could. If we were to pick up like proper funding, I mean, we could, I'm willing to work with directors and everything else in tech crews. I am an actor. a lot of our shows call for not cheesy acting, but it's the show structure itself. I mean, when we're sitting with those little helmets on your head, it's hard to be serious when it's spinning around on you, and you kind of lose focus for a little second there. I mean, these things wouldn't happen if you had proper equipment.
Yeah, well, so I mean, it's part of the, what I like about what we're doing is it's much like a painting. It's an object with a real history, in the real world. The evidence of its making is obvious in its,
I think you've nailed something there, Eric. I'll agree with you. Not that I ever did disagree with you on that subject, but at the same time, with the history of the Zorna Bingo Ridge show, you could go back and check out each individual's episodes, and usually we toss around the date, but there's a lot of references to real-world activity. If you go back, we talk about tornadoes, we talked about wars, and we mentioned a lot of history and stuff. So in these shows, you can actually... If you were to go back in history now and watch it, say, 50 years ago, you could say, wow, these guys were there during this time. One of the
I think it's interesting, like our zombie show basically has been was a giant view of the zeitgeist in popular culture. Why is zombies so so fluorescing right now in popular culture?
Well, first, I think, Eric, I mean, if your question isn't rhetorical, let me put it in two cents here. People like doomsday events.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of movies, most movies are based on tragedy, unless it's a comedy or something, but there's some element of destruction, some element of danger, some doomsday activity, some extreme life event, Ellie, these make the big blockbusters because people like to see, it's that whole, I mean, nobody wants a whole bunch of people to die, but everybody wants a zombie apocalypse,
mm-hmm.
So we go to see these things. It's the same reason why we go see horror movies, because it's safe.
I have a theory.
While you're being scared. So in these same things, you can put yourself into these types of situations while you're watching the movie, you become enthralled with the movie, and in that rapture, you identify with the people in the movie that are screaming and going through this horrible event, and then at the end of the night, you just walk out of the theater and go, "Ooh, that was a good movie." And I think it appeals to a basic human nature. I mean, like I said, it's an oddity. It's almost a paradox in humanity. We like to see tragedy, but we don't want it to happen to us.
Well, I think the obsession in Western culture with apocalypse has much to do with our rise as an accumulation of knowledge from like the ancient Greeks to the Romans to the medieval Europe. We have this long chain of beliefs. Our ideas of logic come from the Greeks. Our ideas of laws and nascent Christianity come from Rome. I remember listening to this ideas lecture series on CBC where people who study culture say that what we have here in the Western world is a Christian atheism, a Christian secular or non-secular culture. In other words, our atheism has arisen differently because it was based in a Christian matrix. And then most
Which
often...
makes them agnostic.
Well, it just means that a lot of the baggage is still there, though. Our idea of apocalypse, our obsession with apocalypse, it can be based in the Christian worldview of, a longing for Armageddon, wanting to bring on the rapture, wanting to join with the divine. It can manifest in real world problems like the neocon and the dominionist type worldviews who want Israel to be destroyed by some sort of Middle Eastern war and then rebuilt so that having the Third Temple of Solomon or whatever rebuilt in Jerusalem will signal the end of the world. There's people basing foreign policy decisions on these types of long-term plans for the Bible's version of events.
I can't remember which politician was making reference to a zombie attack. It was a Canadian politician. He was actually talking about staging a plan.
Staging a plan?
Yeah. And
about zombies?
Google it up, guys, if you want to laugh. There is Canadian politicians that are worried about zombie attacks. I know I'm being a little bit, I'm taking it somewhat out of context, but not that much, which is the sad irony.
There
is an event, and I was sitting here just, and I was listening to you, and I don't disagree with you, Eric, so I mean, I can't sit here and actually
It sounds paranoid, and it sounds conspiracy, because it is.
It is what it is. We do have a real-time event that is going to be happening very soon. Future royals, Britain's royals are about to
pop a new royal.
Exactly.
Yes.
What do you think of this? I mean, Princess Kate, or no? What is she now? Is she? She's not a queen yet. No, she's still a princess, isn't she?
Princess, I believe.
They're the Duke and Duchess of See, there goes my foreign policy. I'm not very good at it.
Of whatever.
Yeah, I can't.
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't really matter. I guess, you know, if I had a real interest in this, I probably would pay more attention. And that, I mean, that's the truth of anything. I mean, most people remember what they want to remember. And in this case here, I really don't remember. And there's a reason. I do have a very legitimate reason. And when it comes to, and I can tie all this in very interestingly. I mean, do you remember how much hoopla and whatnot there was for the recent wedding of these two newlywed royals?
Oh yes, I do remember. It was supposed to be the biggest social event since their parents.
I mean, it was, and the security and the whole event. I mean, and it went off, and I didn't watch it, and I'll be honest, I boycotted it. And everybody's suddenly going, oh, no, not cute little Kate and her husband. Oh, my God, they make so cute a couple and everything else. They forget that for the last thousand of years, I mean, I don't want to sit here and make up history, but I mean, go back, Google this shit, find out when Britain started asserting itself and dominated all over the planet. And not only that, but and influence foreign policy and... And I mean, people, they've killed and killed and conquered and destroyed whole people, like lives and everything else. These are horrid, horrid conquerors.
Well, their ancestors were, yeah.
Well, I'm not saying that these people, that Kate's running around with a butcher knife or something in the kitchen or something. I'm saying that this lineage is a real, I mean, they should be tried for war crimes.
Oh, nonsense.
I mean, not like I said, not cute little Kate herself, but their ancestors would have been, had they been doing what they were doing, if they were doing it now. They would be on trial for war crimes.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Okay, now, does your ancestry define you? In this case, I believe it does. Now, it's not because I have some sort of anything about the Brit people. They are my common ancestors. I mean, you know, I'm Canadian, just like, you know, it's not that I don't dislike them, and I please, I hope you understand this, I don't like the idea of royalty in any country. It is an inefficient, old, archaic way of running a government. Now, I understand that the Queen is a public figurehead. Still, she's, you know, this amassed wealth and this it's like they've got this, I don't get the psychosis of it, where you have, you know, a working government, but you've got a royal family where they sit there and they get to basically rake in millions of dollars just on whatever else, and really, they don't do anything.
Well, once again, it's my contention that our modern people are embedded in their history. The fact that they have a royal family in Britain is a hangover of the fact that they had a royal family for a long time. When we transition from feudalism to the nation state, as a species, we stopped executing our kings at one point, and made a conscious decision to, in the case of the British, let them exist but strip away all their power, and give them a modest allowance to live on.
Modest?
By current standards, not so modest. And it's part of the decrease in violence, I think, at the top levels. Steven Pinker argues that we live in the least violent time ever, but we merely see more violence in our everyday lives because media is getting good at capturing it, seeing it. You know, a lot of these devastating explosions at like oil factories and things like that, Megantic in Quebec, you know, initially 20 years ago, you know, you might never see pictures of some of these things. You might never see video of some of these things. You might hear about it on the news. I read about it in the paper. Maybe there'd be a picture a couple days after the fact. But now, our access to events, I think, is fueling our fear of increased violence in the world.
But getting back on track and to sum up my argument, when this new arrival comes from the royal family, I don't see it as a good thing.
Well, the fact that you even know about the royals and you're not British is just another accident.
Understandably.
History.
It's irritating to me that any country does that. Now, I'm not that I'm picking on the British, but at the same time, it's so publicized. You're right. There's so much attention to it. I look at it and go, why is it such a big deal? It's just another baby. It's just another tax drain on the British people.
They're a living representation of the nation.
Well, I think they need to crawl out of their archaic cave and embrace the future and throw back all that money into the economy and make Britain the nation it's supposed to be. Same with Canada. I think we should get rid of the old man's club and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, that's just, you know, I have a lot of, you know, when it comes to, you know, all these religion and everything else, I've got a lot to say. But, I mean, that's my two cents. Just to tie it all up, we're talking about the people listening in on our podcast are going to go, what are these guys talking about? The British? You know, and so there you have it. You know, we're ahead of the game.
Okay.
I know it's going to be a mention on one of our shows about the baby.
My final, note on that today is that the British changed their laws so that if it's a girl, then she will be able to inherit the throne even if she has brother siblings.
Yeah, see, once again, like, let's just change policy now after thousands of years. And I mean, what they're doing is they're making their little family kind of like a, what's the Kardashian show? They're keeping up the Kardashians. Now it's the royal family. It's a live reality show in which the British find a commonality, in which they find, you know, some sort of a psychological bond to their country.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't surprise me in the least that they're changing, like, ancient, rulings and laws just to suit the whims, the needs. I think it's just a little bit of a Hollywood touch to what has become of the royal family.
You're so fucked in the head. you're like, on one hand, you're disparaging this conservative notion of the past, and then
it should be,
you criticize them for modernization.
They're not modernization.
Yeah, having a girl inherit the
throne. You know what it reminds me of
an equality issue.
The only thing I can compare it to right off the top of my head is that
gender equality.
I understand that, but I mean, on the very same notion that for how many years the church has criticized, you know, homosexuality, and all of a sudden now in 1988 the United Church of Canada voted in where homosexual individuals can be ordained as a minister. And like quite recently itself, you know, I mean, we're watching with the California passing of the same sex laws for marriage. It's the same thing. We're catering to the masses. I mean, and in that case, I'm not saying it's a bad thing.
Changing your justification for attacking conservatism and attacking conservative things you don't like, and then arguing for the conservative ideas that you like. You're just a hypocrite at a base level.
No, I am not a hypocrite.
You're the worst kind. You don't see the hypocrisy.
First of all, I believe the party politics cripple a democratic process. Okay?
Oh, Christ.
So when you actually want to talk politics to me, don't talk party politics. Because I don't see the point in
I'm
arguing
talking
with you,
at a basic
it's not that
level
I'm conservative or liberal.
Of ideology.
I'm talking about making like a world government and all this other thing. So, I mean, is that liberal to think that I want to change every government in the world? Probably extreme liberalism. But at the same time, I still want traditional values for families and things like this. And I'm not saying...
There is no such thing as traditional
British family,
family values.
That's a form of government I would do away with. But I would do away with every single royal family.
It's the most traditional family in
every single country in the entire world. Mm. And establish a proper, logical government for everybody, where everybody gets, you know, equality and stuff. I am not conservative in no
really.
Way, and I'm certainly not a liberal thinker.
Do you think that families should be allowed to indoctrinate their children in a religious order? In a religion, or should they allow them to grow up without religion and then choose when they become of age?
I think
that
they should grow up with the religion of the parents choosing, and from there on make their own choice.
So it's okay then. You don't see that as a form of
brainwashing.
Yeah.
No, I don't see it as a form of brainwashing. For weaker-minded people, perhaps it might be a little bit of a catch, you know, like where they, you know, that's they like, let's say, and I don't mean to pick on any, but let's say somebody who, you know, fundamentalists. Oh yes, the world was created in 7 days. Yep, God just said, get her done, and poof, there she was. No, I mean, okay, people that can't think for themselves. Is it a form of brainwashing? No. It's just an unfortunate happenstance that they're that dumb. But for anybody else who grows up, I mean, if you start learning about any given religion, every religion shares one fundamental aspect. To push, to drive, to find out more. And if, I mean, in Christianity, in Buddhism, and all these, you know, all these different types of religions across the planet, one of the major aspects is that you try to enlighten yourself, try to figure things out, become more at one with your creator. So, I mean, does it brainwash you? No. I think religion's a good thing. But to think that, you know, what religion you start with doesn't necessarily mean you're going to end up that way if you follow your religion properly.
Hmm.
You didn't think I actually had a really good answer for that, did you?
You
believe
you have an answer.
Do you believe that brainwashing is as a, or now have I convinced you?
No, it's just that most religious teaching is not about real exploration.
Well, you're
most
right.
Religious teaching is about irrational faith and
faith and
disparagement of other learning. You know.
Well, okay, let's see. I can name two off the top of my head: the Jehovah Witnesses and Muhammad. In that sense, where he's saying that anybody that doesn't practice our religion is an infidel, and in Jehovah Witnesses, there's, I forget what the number is, 2,200 or something. There's only 2,200 souls that are going to be saved. You know, there are religions out there that do have closed-mindedness.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with the majority of religions, it's anybody who does, like I say, try to better themselves, not only in that way, but also in their, you know, in their faith, they're going to find that their base religion is just a stepping stone. And it's just a place to start. And because I've read there's five major religions.
Do you think it's possible to get to the same place than through a non-religious background?
Everybody's going to what we would call the afterlife, in the sense where, you know, a heaven or...
Well,
know.
Everybody gets to see whether or not there is one.
See, first of all, you have to understand, I have, in my studies, I've become Baha'i, In which case I believe that all religions on the world are correct. And each are just a difference only because of the manifestations of our Creator with the individualism of the cultures, and they're going to come off as a little bit different, but at the same time they're all going to share commonalities. And you find that. With all religions, there's a commonality thread woven through all, you know, all of them. And of course, they're written from, you know, by man, or, you know, by, you know, in a lot of cases, even modified by powerful ruling people and used to manipulate the masses. In that case, you might argue, you know, brainwashing and whatnot. It was a way to, for people to, you know, ensure, you know, control. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's easier to say, okay, you can't, you know, you can't kill anybody. It's a law of the land, or to say, our holy book says, thou shalt not kill.
I think it's important for people to be able to deal with the actuality of the world around them. And any ideas or practices that support non-rationality and even the disparagement of reality, you know, are not going to help human beings to become a better, you know, host species on this planet. We're just gonna keep squabbling over nonsense.
I'd like to think, and I mean, this is, in fact, if anybody wants to look it up, go to zorn.ca, and I've written an article entitled "Humanity or Virus," in which I make a description of both on the concept of being a human, and the concept of the species of a virus. And it's what I try to do in that article is make the distinction that the only mannerism of creature on this earth that destroys its own host is a virus. Every other species will learn either cohabitation or an equalization within its habitat, but a virus will not, and neither do humans.
That's a very narrow definition.
It's, well, like I said, it's just it's. I think it was written even back in 2006,
right.
But it's available online. Just once again, just a short blog.
I would make it more specific.
Well, I do. I give it a little bit more thought. I'm paraphrasing the article.
I know. I'm just saying the title. If you had a specific virus that actually did that to it, so it's not all viruses do. That's my point.
When I say virus, what do you think of?
Virus.
Right. Common cold, or do you think of like Ebola?
Not right away, but it's really? One of the ones I think of.
Oh, no. I think of like the real, you know, streptococcus and all the other really...
Okay, well, those are...
I sit there and I go Ebola.
But not all viruses kill their host.
Yes, all viruses will endeavor to kill their host. Hence virus, dude. It's
not all viruses kill their hosts. Some viruses are symbiotic with hosts. Some viruses are just not that damaged. I mean,
we're not talking tapeworms and stuff, dude.
All I'm saying is you can't generalize all viruses strive to kill their hosts. That's not scientifically accurate.
And I suppose
accurate.
In that same argument, one could easily say that
just,
not all humans endeavor
it's
to
just
kill
not strictly
the earth,
accurate.
And some do, you know, but there's a minor few, and
if
yes,
you were
there's
to say,
exceptions.
If you were
Is
to
that
say,
a fair analogy?
If you were to say humans are a malignant virus, or...
But no, I don't, because I'm offering the reader the chance to make the decision for themselves. I don't come straight out and say that humans are a virus. I just make the distinction between the two, that humans are one of the only species on the planet that will kill the Earth. They will destroy it in their efforts to maintain their way of life.
So you're not comparing humans to viruses?
I am, but I allow the reader to make their own opinion. A lot of, same as my article with Jedi versus Sith, not so good versus evil. Mm-hmm. I make the same thing. I explain where my point of view on it, but I allow, you know, I don't say, well, they're the exact same. No, I'm going to describe the three different reasons why Jedi are different than Sith Lords. So it's most of my writing is that way. It's I try not to sit there and make opinions for people. I like people to, you know, sit there and read it and maybe you think about it a little bit.
You often have unexplained assumptions in your writing.
You may think so.
No, I mean, it's there.
You should read my article on well, I was going to say euthanasia. I think there was one where I wrote about that, but there was the one I'd like to talk was eugenics. I wrote two articles on eugenics just based on the concept of the knee-jerk reaction of people to the concept of eugenics itself.
On the concept of what?
Eugenics.
Based on the concept of what?
Everybody has a knee-jerk reaction to it. Instant knee-jerk reaction. They go, oh, Hitlerism, oh, you're a Nazi. It's like, what the hell are you talking about? Go read up on that. It's
I think the largest eugenics experiment in the world is running in China right now, with their one-child policy.
See, eugenics isn't it's actually an old idea, but it's from its very base core, it's selective breeding. Mm-hmm. But I mean, everybody does that. It's when you go to the bar and you're sitting there looking around the bar, you don't think, oh, she'd make really good genes for my offspring, but back in your mind you go, ooh, girl, pretty. You've decided what you would like to have to procreate with and possibly try to, produce offspring. Mm-hmm. Everybody and Charles Darwin wrote about that in some of his articles, where he wrote about eugenics as a selective breeding based on our species, which is why a lot of birds have plumage and stuff. It's to attract a mate.
Well, you're talking about sexual selection.
There's more than
just natural selection that influences.
I understand that, but I'm just saying the whole idea is I'm gonna mate with you. The whole idea is I'm gonna mate with you is based on the idea of
yeah. Well, selection. Eugenics is just applied sexual selection.
You're
and
talking
applied,
forced eugenics.
Well, no, I mean infanticide is a side effect, a eugenic effect, you might say. With this policy of one child in China, they're seeing many more boys than girls being registered in the official listings. So girls are either being killed off early as a result of neglect or outright infanticide. And, they're... The result is a glut of boys in China. They have more than they can, marry off. they're going to have problems in the future, I guess, with an overabundance of
singles. Well, they own America. They'll just come over here,
right, and do well in our universities and get all the cool chicks. Damn it.
The whole idea is I'm gonna mate with you.
Just kidding.
The whole idea is I'm gonna mate with you.
That was a grim turn. Let's talk about something funny.
How about the fact that you still don't change your clothes for the Zorna Migarage show yet? It's your prop? It's your thing?
I had a helmet this time. What do you mean?
When you wore a tie the other time, too.
I had a helmet. You didn't notice the helmet?
I've seen the helmet. Huh. You didn't change your overalls, though. You're supposed to wear white.
I don't have white overalls.
You were supposed to get some.
I couldn't afford any. Sorry.
Damn overalls.
The whole idea is I'm gonna mate with you.
I don't know. Are we just about to run out of things to say?